Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, we got Brendan Nunez, a heartbreak kid from the Kings Herald, on as we talk about the Kings moving up to number four in the draft. I want to say one thing before I get to the question I have for Brendan. With Soren talking about, you know, the failed high school guys. And I get it. I understand that. For every Kobe and KG, there's a Martell Webster. There's a Corleone Young. I get it. Don't get it twisted. But how many great college players do we see come into the NBA and do nothing? How good was Jimmer Fredette in college? How good was Nick Stauskas in college? Like, we see this all the time. And this is what the draft is, right? The draft is a crapshoot. The draft is evaluating these guys and really doing the best that you can, but hoping that they reach the potential that you may have set for them. There's nobody, whether it's Shaedon Sharpe, Jaden Ivey, Keegan Murray, who's a sure thing, or most of these guys aren't sure things. You know what I mean? Kevin Durant, LeBron James, all those guys. Yeah, we see that. Aldrin brings in Thomas Robinson, was another guy that was an All-American Player of the Year in college at Kansas. And from game one, it was clear that he wasn't able to play in the NBA. So those things happen, and we can pick these guys apart and line them up with guys that didn't work or guys that did work all day long. But at the end of the day, I just feel like it's all an educated guess. That's all it really is an educated guess, and you got to hope that these guys reach the potential that you set for them. Right, Brendan?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that if you have favorites that you feel really good about in the draft, then – I think more often than not, like, trust your gut. As long as there's good research behind your reasoning and everything, like, I'm not all opposed to, like, I think Jabari Smith Jr. is perfect for this team. And I really like Chet Holmgren as well. Like, I really would consider packaging the fifth overall pick and, say, a top four protected 2023 first to move up and get Chet or Jabari. Like, I understand the risk involved. Like, the next draft is really promising at the top with Victor from France, and then you got Scoot Henderson. Like, I know the guys at the top of the next draft are really intriguing, but at some point, like, I think the Kings got to use some of these assets and really make something happen right now. And if they believe in somebody like Jabari or Chet, like, I don't think that that's out of the question.
Yeah. I look at those three guys at the top, and James talked about this a little bit, and I could see them even falling. I don't think Jabari would be the one to fall. I think it may be somebody like Paolo, who somebody could be in love with Jaden Ivey. Somebody could be in love with Shaedon Sharpe and take that potential. And maybe Paolo would be the one that falls down. And I think Paolo would be a great fit here for the Kings. And it just, James talked about it. You're just in a really good spot in this particular draft at the four because you have so many options. You got so many things that could happen as far as people falling down, somebody trying to move up, and being able to kind of maneuver around that. It's a really good spot for the Kings to be in this year.
Yeah, Kenny, and I think every day, like, moving forward, we're going to gather more and more information on all these prospects. So, like, someone mentioned it in the chatty house, but the NBA is starting to release the combine measurements, and like Shaedon Sharpe just came in at 6'4¼ without shoes on. And so he all of a sudden isn't a small forward. He's a shooting guard.
Although, James, when that happens, he's never going to play without shoes. So I'm not, I'm almost not sure why they even measure without shoes. Like, he's, he's never playing barefoot.
I remember when Hassan Whiteside showed up in flip flops and didn't measure 7 foot tall because he measured at 6'11 and three quarters because he was wearing flip flops and not tennis shoes. So, you know, there is a difference between being a 7 footer and not being a 7 footer, but still, like, that puts him at 6'6 at best, and 6'6 and his wingspan 6'11 and three and a half. So, I mean, that's a huge like a plus seven. Like, you know, height to wingspan, that's tremendous. But again, he's more of a shooting guard going forward than he is a small forward. And that does change the calculus a little bit on him. And I think we're going to find out more and more as we're going through this process, like how tall guys are, how, you know, can they lift at all? You know, their speed and agility, it doesn't look like much, but those things do actually tell you something specifically on the defensive end. And I think this is a good point to, like, start mulling through. I know that, like, I've heard concerns that the Kings don't believe, well, and other teams don't believe that Keegan Murray is as tall as they've said he is. And so they're waiting to figure out what exactly you know, the measurements come in at before they make a true sort of, you know, assessment on the whole package.
James, one thing I'm curious about, do you think that if the Kings say they really like Ivy and that's the guy at four for them, the other three that we assume are gone are, that being Paolo, Chet, and Jabari, but while they do really like Ivy, they think that he's not a great fit alongside Fox and Sabonis. Do you think that we know, based on, like, the previous drafts that we've seen from McNair, like, what that sort of scenario would lead to? Do you think that they'd be willing to just take the guy that they think is more talented, even if the fit isn't there? I mean, it's kind of fault to me could revolve back to McNair having and Wes Wilcox having possibly 1 year left on their contract.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up that specific thing. What you don't want here is a general manager and assistant general manager to make a decision on this draft pick based on their futures with the team. That's another reason, along a myriad of other reasons, why the Kings should at this point go and extend Monty and Wes. To me, without any question. I mean, you just let them hire a coach. They need to have a contract. What you don't want them to do is just to make a knee-jerk reaction. Because I could make the argument very clearly that, you know, you could trade the fourth pick for, you know, Jeremy Grant. And everyone goes, oh, that's not good. Well, does that make your team better? Yes, it does. It makes it better next year. And so when you put someone in a position to make a rash decision to save their own job, then that's on you. That's not on them for making that decision. You would hope that they would have like a very, very, you know, good heart and thinking about the future of the franchise more than their own future. But that's just not the reality. That's just not the reality at all. So, yeah, I mean, you have to manage this thing properly. Like, it's difficult. Like, but I get the question, you know, like, this is a point where the franchise can make they can make mistakes very easily, and they need to be all on the same page moving forward.
Brendan, you're absolutely allowed to change this 15 times if you need to before the June NBA draft. But today, who are you taking at number four if you're the Sacramento Kings?
Assuming that Jabari, Chet, and Paolo are gone, I'm going Jaden Ivey.
Okay.
The athleticism is too tantalizing. It pops off the screen. And I think that there's the idea with Ivy that he has all the things you can't teach, and the areas that he needs to improve are typically more teachable skills, is kind of what I'm subscribing to right now. The flashes of space creation do it for me. I'm buying in the 35% from three. He shot 52.2% effective field goal percentage on catch and shoots. Like, I see how it could work on offense, and hard to pass on star ceiling to me.
Yeah, I hear you.
But sure. I might take you up on changing that a couple times over before June 23rd.
I'm shading right now, but I like Jaden Ivey. Like, he's amazing. He's fun to watch. He's a blur out there. And I say that he's a lot like De'Aaron Fox. I'm maybe in the minority with some, that's not a bad thing. I love watching De'Aaron Fox when he's clicking and when he's on. He's a fun player. He's great on the offensive end. He has the ability to do things on the defensive end, and that's the same things that I see out of Ivy. Like, I think he has a lot of those same attributes. So if the Kings went with him, hey, man, I'd be all for it. I'd be so excited to see him with the Sacramento Kings, man. Am I mistaken, or did you change that? Were you on Keegan Murray a lot of the time, or were you always on Ivy?
I was probably on Murray when they were sitting around seven, but with four, I think I was on Ivy. Yeah. I'm probably trade the pick, to be honest, but it depends what, you know, that's all circumstantial based on what is and isn't available.
The price has gone up, Brendan. The price has gone up for that pick. All right, that's what I'm telling everybody that's calling me. The price has gone up. Once again, Fat Joe said it best. Yesterday's price is not today's price. All right, that's just what it is. So, Brendan, we appreciate you pulling up, man. You can check him out at the King's Herald, man. You can check him out on the King's Beat, yeah, every now and then with James Hamm. I love listening to you guys, man. You guys are doing a great job with that. HBK, we appreciate you, big dog.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
No doubt, man. We're coming back. Myself, James Hamm. More Kings talk. We got to talk about game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. That was something to watch last night in Miami. We'll get into all of that and a little bit more right here. D'Lo and KC, no Damian today. It's James rolling with me. We'll be right back on ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC continues. Streaming live on the Odyssey app.
Back here on D'Lo and KC. No Damian today. He's got the day off, man. Big ups to him. But I got James Hamm with me. You know, we go crazy with James on him for an hour. Even on here, he's going to be here for the whole 4 hours today. It's really going to go crazy. And he's on with us today on one of the, this is sad to say, to be honest with you, one of the great moments in Kings history in the last 15, 20 years. Is that safe to say? Top five.
That's horrible.
That is horrible. They didn't even get number one. They moved to four, and we're like, it's one of the great moments ever.
Yeah. I mean, you got to celebrate the little things, right?
That's right.
I guess. You got to celebrate the little things.
That's how you got to do it. Real quick, I wanted to get your take on this real quick. I think we mentioned it a couple weeks ago when it was rumored, but it's official now. California Classic going to Chase Center, going to San Francisco. That sucks. That sucks. And I thought you said that, and I think you did. I just want you to break it down. That essentially the Kings created the California Classic. So if they created it, how did the Warriors take it?
I think they just worked out a thing where they're going to switch out. It's going to rove. Which, I mean, for me, that's not great.
Those two or, like, all four? Well, it wouldn't be Miami, but LA two.
Well, that's going to be the question, right? So they haven't had the Clippers as part of it. It's been the Lakers, right? It's the Lakers, the Warriors, the Kings, and the Miami Heat, which is always strange that the Miami Heat are thrown in there. But I just think it's such a great event, especially in downtown Sacramento in the middle of summer. It gives you something to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll probably all carpool down, me and Brendan there, and maybe Sean,
And one thing I was going to say, I will say this about the new California Classic in San Francisco. It is on the weekend this time, so it does give people from Sacramento an opportunity to go down and check it out. I think it's July 4th weekend. The 4th of July is on a Monday. I think it's on the 2nd and 3rd of July, so Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, all is not lost. I really would have been upset if it was in the middle of the week down there. That would have really upset me. But all right. It's on the weekend. You get to go down there if you want to check out Shaedon Sharpe in his first, you know, appearance with the Sacramento Kings. Speaking into existence.
That's right. 6'4", Shaedon Sharpe. With his 49
says he's 6'6", so he's 6'6".
Give him the shoes. Yeah, they you're right. They don't play without shoes.
49-inch vertical is crazy. Wow. You said it was the highest in the history of the combine, right?
That's not his combine measurement, the 49-inch vert, but there is a video of him, like, skying. We'll have to get to it. You know, a lot of these guys have just incredible athleticism. But to me, is it functional athleticism? Because I watch a guy like AJ Griffin, and he's supposed to have a tremendous vert, well over 40-inch vert, and he plays below the rim the whole time, so it doesn't really matter. Right. Like, unless you watch him get up to block a shot, or all of a sudden he skies in big for a rebound, but like when he attacks the rim, he doesn't use his athleticism at all unless he's breaking out, you know, if he's on the break and doing stuff like that. So,
James, with the Kings at four, I'm just assuming right now that they're keeping the pick. There's a lot of things we talked about that come about with this, but let's say, like I said, they say they keep the pick. Is it really a three-player race for that fourth pick, in your opinion, or is there somebody that we're not talking about? When I say three players, I'm talking Shaedon Sharpe, I'm talking Jaden Ivey, and I'm talking Keegan Murray. Is there somebody that we're not looking at that might be able to get into that four range?
I mean, to be honest with you, like Keegan Murray isn't anywhere near the four pick for me.
What's up with Keegan? Why you feel that way?
I just, you know, watching him play, he's interesting. And I think he'll be a solid rotational player in the NBA, but I don't think that there's plus rotational player there. You know, he's not going to be a plus starter, in my opinion. I mean, I might be way off, but like if at the pro level, if he reaches, you know, again, Sadiq Bey range, which is, that's a really good player. Mm-hmm. And Sadiq went way, he went where, you know, where you usually get guys like that. Guys who are solid players. And maybe I'm crazy. I mean, he put up a bunch of points in college. I just didn't buy a lot of the stats. Like, watching him play, you know, can he shoot the three? Sure, he can shoot the three. But he also shot the three better in stints in the tournament than he had all season long. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, okay, is that repeatable? Is that something that's going to be there long term? I heard all about this defending multiple positions. I didn't see it. I didn't see him move a lot. His instincts didn't just blow me away. You know, you watch Tyrese Haliburton, it takes you 2 seconds to know that his instincts are just incredible. Mm-hmm. Like the way he cuts off a pass on the baseline and steals passes on the baseline all the time, the way he jumps passing lanes. Anyway, he just really does have a lot of, a tremendous basketball IQ. It jumps off the table, off the screen, like when you're watching it. And then when I look at Murray, it's like, okay, I see who you can be. You know, you can be Trevor Ariza, maybe. You know, you can be a solid NBA. But those types of players usually go between like 12 and 18 in the draft. They don't go number four. They don't go number eight. Like, I don't think his potential is to be a 20-point-a-game scorer. I don't think his potential is as high as Harrison Barnes. So just maybe I'm wrong, and I'm just missing it. But I definitely think he's a perfectly fine prospect. And if you're building a team, he can fit into your rotation and probably be there for a long time. But at the same time, when you're drafting in number four, that's not what you're going for. You're swinging for the fences because you're trying to get an elite weapon. And if you can't, you don't think that pick is there, but someone else might think it is, and you need to trade with that other team and go get some other assets.
And the thing with Keegan Murray, because there are things that I like about his game. He kind of reminds me a little bit. You see different comps of Al Horford. You know, yeah, I kind of see that. I think Horford plays a little bigger than Keegan Murray. You know what I'm saying? Horford was almost a center. You know what I mean?
He was a center for most of his career.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in Atlanta, he was a center. Him and Zaza would be, you know, in that front court. I don't know if he plays as big as Al Horford, but, you know, I see the shot. I like some of the things that he does. The thing with Murray, and you mentioned it a little bit, is if you're taking him at 7 or 8, yeah, I understand that. I got you. We could work with that. If you're taking it at him at 4 and you're passing on potential superstars like Shaedon and Jaden Ivey, man, that's hard to wrap my brain around. Like I said, I mentioned it earlier. with Shaden, and then you could probably throw Jaden Ivey in this situation as well. If I take those two guys, or in my case, if I take Shaden and he doesn't work out, I can live with that. I can. I'll be like, you know what? There was a huge potential right here, a huge possible ceiling. He didn't make it. He didn't come close to the ceiling. That's the way it goes. If I take Keegan Murray and Shaden becomes what I thought he could be, or even Jaden Ivey, man, I can't rock with that. I'll be like, man, why? Keegan's cool, but why didn't I just trust my gut and go with the high upside? And those are the decisions that you have to make it for. That may keep Monty and Wes Wilcox up all night long, every night, until we get to the draft and after.
No, I think so, too. I mean, really, the number four pick is such a valuable pick. I mean, you do have to swing for the fences. So while I don't believe that Sharp or Ivy, either one, have superstar potential, mm-hmm. I think they could have star potential. Like, there's a big distinction there. Maybe I'm wrong. But, like, when I look at him, those guys play, I'm like, okay, that's good. But it's going to take 2-3 years for them to get to the point where they can contribute in that way. Mm-hmm. Like, very rarely do we see players come in that just automatically make this huge difference. And I mean, there are some points, but even like, look at Cade Cunningham last year. At Cade Cunningham, everyone, you know, believed he would be a superstar coming into the league, and he's really good, but you're starting to wonder if he can be a superstar. And maybe I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but like, he didn't put up numbers that would lead you to believe that he's going to be a superstar, an all-star. Sure, but a superstar is something different, you know, and that's where, you know, Luka jumps into the league and is putting up 25 a game, right, like instantly, and you're like, oh my goodness, what in the world?
Yeah,
so I don't know. Like, again, I really do like, I like Keegan Murray as a potential guy for the Kings to draft, just not this high, and I didn't even like him at seven. You know, I've compared him to Marvin Williams. You know, who's a perfectly fine player.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, when you take those guys, you know what you're getting is right. What I think the point is. And there are a lot of guys in this draft that they might have a whole lot more in their bag than what you're getting there.
All right. And I'm going to make sure to be aware of this, because, you know, it's part of the job and it's part of the evaluation, but it's not something that I really am fond of, and we're going to get into it with this being the fourth pick and everything. So many people spend so many times talking about what these guys can't do and why they shouldn't be. And I'm going to try and check myself on that, you know, as we go through this whole process, because I think Keegan Murray's a really good ball player. And I think, you know, there's things that he could do that could be a good fit for the Kings. If I had to pick, I would just pick some, you know, another guy. But that doesn't mean Keegan Murray is going to be a bum, or, you know, he's not going to translate or anything like that. It's just, in this particular situation, this is where I would go. Same with Shaden. Same with Jaden Ivey. People are going to spend so much time looking at reasons why they shouldn't be the pick and why they shouldn't do that. I think I look at it the complete opposite way. You potentially have, you know, if we just talk about these three guys, you got a chance to get a really good ball player. Like, I don't, maybe that's too pie in the sky to say, but man, you almost can't miss. I think all three of these guys are going to be good in the NBA. You know, maybe one will be better than the other or whatever. But I think this is why I'm so excited about the Kings landing at four, is I think you're getting a good ball player if you keep the pick, if you draft. I think you're getting a good young dude, man. And I like to look at that and embrace that more than to get in debates as to why this guy won't work or this guy won't. You know what I mean? It's just not really what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this too. I think that there's a very good opportunity here for either Ivy or Sharp to jump into the top three and push one of these bigs to the Kings.
Mm.
And so that's why you have to be malleable here. You've got to be able to watch. You got to be able to watch them and see where, you know, like, be patient. Like, there's no reason to rush until you're on the clock, and then you're rushing. But at that point, you should already have like five different things set up,
right?
You know, five different options set up. And so I really do think that that's where you should look. And, you know, I, again, people think that the Marvin Williams comp is a bad comp. Wasn't Marvin Williams like the third pick in the draft?
See, yeah, like, I think he was second, went to Atlanta. And Marvin Williams played with like four first-round picks or something on that team. Like, yeah, he averaged 11 because they had Sean May and all these other guys who were projected to go in the first round playing with him as well. And he went the highest of them all. I think he went highest. He was the freshman, right?
And again, the reason I bring him up is because the body style, body movement, the way that, you know, every once in a while, both of them will throw down a dunk that you just go, oh my gosh, like, holy cow. But it's like once every two games where they do something that they flash their athleticism that they have. And so that's why I like, and it's not that I dislike him as a prospect. I try to like relate him to who it is that I think that they look like and how they could work in the league. And, and I've watched the league a long time and covered the draft a long time, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not. I did not like, Franz Wagner last year, and I was wrong, but I still think that, you know, there's a lot of value there. This is what I kept saying. There's a lot of value for him as a four, because I think that's where he'll be long-term. Right. But at that point in the draft, there was a lot of other players that I liked a lot, including Josh Giddey, who ended up jumping way ahead of where we thought he would go.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun draft. A couple of things I wanted to ask you pertaining to this draft. First, I got to give a shout-out to our guy, Matt George, Matty McQueen. You know what I mean? He came up with a great question the other day on the show, and he was talking about the number one pick, but I think it still equates with the Kings having a four pick. And that's trading it away. And he asked with the number one pick, what's the floor for what you would trade that pick for? And we were talking about the number one pick. And his guys were like, the lowest person that I would trade that pick for is a Jaylen Brown or Brandon Ingram, you know, somebody like that. I don't think you have that same type of leverage at the four, but still, now there's a four. That floor has raised from where it was when you thought you were seven or eight. What's the lowest type of guy that you would trade for? Is John Collins still on that list of guys that you would trade the four for, or has that changed a little bit?
No, I mean, I think John Collins, like what I'm looking for there is a frontline NBA starter that is either an all-star level player or has all-star potential, is young and under contract, right?
You saw maybe at least 2 years, right?
Yeah, I would say even more. Like, if you're giving up the fourth pick, you better have like a three-four year deal. Mm. Like, it's got to be someone that's going to be there, or that you have full control over, right? So you could have a guy in his third NBA season with, you know, his fourth year remaining, and then a free agent, and I mean, and then he's restricted like and all that stuff. What's that?
Sound like Zion.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm not trading for Zion because of the injuries, and like, you have to be realistic. So again, like, if I'm looking at like Brandon Ingram's not getting traded, and you can say the same thing about Jaylen Brown. I mean, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. Neither of those guys are getting traded. So you have to be realistic, and that's why I think, you know, when you look at John Collins, he's a player that is intriguing because he shoots the three ball. He can block shots. He's a good rebounder for his position. He can be a 20 and 10 guy if you need it. He can be a really, really good second or third scorer. And that's why I think John Collins just makes a ton of sense to me. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's elite.
You would trade the four for John Collins? If you had to,
probably,
like, that's the final spot. Like, I would try to trade without, you know, moving the four. But if Atlanta was like, look, we can get this done only if you include the four, you'd say, okay. I'm on the fence. I don't know. Some moments I'm like, yeah, I would. And then other moments I'm like, I don't know. But you would.
I might need something more. Mm-hmm. And it would also, what am I giving up? Like, I'm not giving up the four and Harrison Barnes in that deal. I would give up the four and like a package that made sense, that we could, you know, get up to John Collins' salary, close to it. Mm-hmm. So the salaries match. But again, you know, you're talking Rashawn Holmes and you're talking, Justin Holliday and, you know, a couple of your $4 to $6 million player expiring contract guys. Mm-hmm. So that's where I would kind of push it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that pick has a lot of value, yeah, and I'm going to maximize that value. And again, that could be moving from 4 to 5 and picking up Sadiq Bey if somehow they would do that.
Man, that'd be crazy.
Maybe you got to throw in a second round pick, right, to balance it. And then I'm sitting there at 5 and I'm still not in love with 5. Mm-hmm. So now I move back again and I take on another player. You know, could you go 5 to 10 and pick up Kyle Kuzma? Mm-hmm. Maybe not, but maybe you could. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm looking at a team that has two players that are really good, and I still have the 10th pick in the draft, and I can still take a swing. But again, I don't like, I'll keep saying this, the Kings roster makeup is bad. Mm. Like, as of right now, it's bad. So you have all these expiring contracts, but the only real way to get young players is to draft young players. I mean, most teams don't just give away young players freely.
Right.
And the Kings don't have any young players. They don't. They have Nemias Keita, and they have Davion Mitchell, and they've got De'Aaron Fox and Dante DiVincenzo, and all of those guys are like 22 and above.
Right.
Like, they don't have anything coming up. And so when you look at the unbalanced of their roster, like, look at a team like Charlotte. We talked about it. They got, you know, super fun guys that are super young and Ball and Bridges, right? Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, They've got PJ Washington, and they've got Book Knight and Kai Jones. They have like some stuff brewing for the future. You look at the Warriors have younger players than the Kings do,
right?
Like all kinds of them.
Yeah.
And high end young players. And so the Kings are in this weird spot where they're like, most of their players are like 24, 25 and up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's uncomfortable. So they need to draft really well here. They need to draft really well in the second round as well.
Yeah.
Try to find somebody that fits long term that you can bring in and bring along and have them, you know, become a rotational player at some point.
Yeah. So now we got Monty McNair and everything that comes along with that. There's just a lot that just keeps coming on with these Kings. Damian says it all the time, right? And he's like, I'm glad they're like, at least they give us things to talk about. Like, if they were Orlando, like bad and then not interesting and nothing going on, man, this would be a tough job talking about these guys all the time. At least the Kings give us something to talk about. So in the scenario, now we've got the situation with Monty McNair where some people believe his decision may in certain ways, and understandably so, be influenced by the extension that he does not have, the security that he does not have here in Sacramento. How much do you think that plays into his decision with what to do with his fourth pick?
Well, again, you hope that he's pure of heart and he's going to do what's best for the franchise no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is why you avoid these situations. Like, there aren't a bunch of GMs around the league that are doing like nefarious things on their way out the door. He's still going to be GMing for his next job, if that makes sense. You know, he's not going to do something so rash that everyone just goes, oh man, we can't ever let that guy be a GM again because he just threw all caution to the wind and did something totally ridiculous.
And in your mind, sorry to cut you off, but in your mind, that would be like trading to be the sixth seed in the playoffs this year, right? Like something just throwing all caution to the wind, or is it drafting the project?
Well, no, I mean, if he drafts, I mean, trades for the sixth seed, that's great. But it's got to be the sixth seed that can be the sixth seed, the four seed, the three seed, and maybe playing for a championship in 5 years.
Yeah.
That of 4 years. I mean, that's what you're looking for. Like, if he trades for someone to get them to the sixth seed, you can't trade for like a 32-year-old and hope that's under contract for a year and a half or something and think that you're going to make it. That's a good deal for the franchise long term,
right?
And so you really have to be cautious, and that's where there's such a fine line here. Like, if your core is the age that the Kings' core is, you know, you can take on a 28-year-old that's really, really good, like an all-star level 28-year-old. Again, like if Bradley Beal was under a longer contract and wanted to come to Sacramento, I'm not sure that he would want to come to Sacramento or anything else. But, you know, if Bradley Beal was available and they were looking at that fourth pick and saying, hey, look, we'll take, you know, Davion and the fourth pick and, you know, Rashawn Holmes and maybe a number 1 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. Right, that deal, like, you would at least look at, because he's not so old that you can't make that deal. Mm-hmm. But he's got to be under contract long term. If you're making that, it's got to be like a trade and extend, extend and trade, as it may be. But yeah, I mean, that's where they have so many options. I really do think that they have to see what the market bears out and where this market's going to go. You know, and how much value that pick has. But you need to get a franchise changing piece here. And whether that piece is for today or it's for next year or the year after, like, it's got to be really good. So either you're drafting for like a major franchise building piece that's going to grow with what you have, and you're drafting with that in mind, or you're going to go swing for the fences with a trade. And I don't think you do anything that is safe. And like at this point, like, aggressive behavior has to happen. You got to go out there and get yourself a really, really, really good player. You have the fourth pick in the draft.
Right.
Like, by hook or by crook, you better come away with a really, really good player. And again, that really good player, it could be that Paolo Banchero falls to the Kings at number 4.
Right.
And they have no choice but to say, man, we've got to take this kid. Jabari Smith Jr. falls to the Kings at 4. These things could happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like it's impossible to see these things playing out. So you have to be, again, you got to be flexible. You got to be light on your feet. You've got to have like 5 or 6 options lined up. And then when push comes to shove, you got to make the right decision at the right time and help build this thing out.
This is a pleasant, unexpected, great surprise. Did not see this actually happen. I thought it would, but man, until Malik Andrews said, oh, and it means the Kings have moved into the top 4, I was like, let's go. We got a lot to talk about, not only today but over the next month and a half. I don't even know when is the draft, like June 23rd or something like that. We got some things to talk about, but we got more to talk about when we come back. I still got questions about Monty McNair and what it means for this Kings franchise and the roster. I said we're going to talk about, sorry, Jesse, we got to talk about it. We're talking about the Eastern Conference Game 1. What a performance in that third quarter by the Miami Heat. We'll get into that. Western Conference Finals Game 1 is tonight in San Francisco. We'll get into all of that. We didn't even talk about my girl at Nani. And once again, thank you, Adnani. We got to talk about her new role with the Sacramento Kings and everything that entailed. We didn't forget about that because we got 4. So much going on, man. Damian Barling out today, but my man James Hammond is riding with me. It's D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC continues, streaming live on the Odyssey app.
D'Lo and KC, brought to you by the good folks over at McQueen and the Violet Fog Gin. I'm absolutely had a Sacramento splash last night celebrating the fact that the Kings got the number 4 pick in the draft. It's Kenny Caraway. Damian's off for today. He's got the day off. But James Hamm riding with us, man. We've had some great discussions about what this means for the Kings moving forward and just all the options, all the things at play for Sacramento having that number 4 pick. And there's still even more that I want to dive in with this draft pick. Monty McNair, we've seen 2 drafts from him right now. And we talk about Keegan Murray being a good fit. We talk about Jaden Ivey maybe being a good fit, maybe not. Shaedon Sharpe being this wild card or whatever the case may be. Is it safe to say, after only 2 drafts, and it's just 2 drafts, do you feel Monty is a best player available type guy? He's not really tripping off fit. He's not necessarily concerned with that. If he has another guy there that's clearly better, he's going to go with that guy. Do you think that's his MO in his draft? And does he continue that now with the 4?
Yeah. Okay. So I would love to tell everyone that, you know, like he's a genius for drafting Tyrese Halliburton. But to be honest with you, Tyrese Halliburton should have gone like number four in the draft. The fact that he was available at number 12 was like shocking and like was a no brainer pick. Now, that's not to take anything away from Monty. Mm-hmm. He made a great pick because that guy is really, really good. But there is a little bit of like, okay, look, you know, let's be realistic here. There was no other pick to take right there. Right. I mean, when the Suns decided to take what Jalen Smith at number 10, yeah. Then you knew the Kings were either going to get Devin Vassell or they were going to get Tyrese Halliburton. And so that was really, really moment.
Not to say that Tyrese is this guy, but what's my man's name in OKC, the general manager?
Sam Presti?
Sam Presti. Sam Presti didn't pull a rabbit out of his hat by drafting Kevin Durant too, right? Like if it wasn't, if Kevin Durant didn't go one, he would have took, if Kevin Durant went one, he would have took Greg Oden. Greg Oden went one, so he took Kevin Durant. It was right there for him. That's kind of what the Monty situation was when he had Tyrese Halliburton sitting there for him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a shock. It was an absolute shock that he fell. Like, I think I had him at like number five or number six coming into the day in one of my final mocks that year. I think I did 23 mocks because it was a pandemic. Mm-hmm. But there were some issues, of course. Tyrese had he had broken a bone in his wrist, I believe, during his sophomore year at Iowa State. Mm-hmm. And he missed half the season and he hadn't played since January. And the draft wasn't until like October. So there was, you know, some craziness there as to why he might have fallen. His agent did not want him to go to a couple of places and would not give medicals. So there was some gamesmanship going there. But at the end of the day, like, look, it's a good pick. It's an excellent pick. But it also was like, if you didn't make that selection, what are you doing? And then, you know, when it came to Davion, I think Davion showed us something different about Monty. I think what that showed you is that he didn't just value like potential points, rebounds, assists. He valued something different, and that was the mentality that the Kings were lacking, the forcefulness, the defensive mindset, all of that stuff, the dog mentality that this team desperately needed. Mm-hmm. He valued a characteristic that doesn't necessarily show up on a stat sheet. And so I thought that that was an interesting pick. Again, we could make the argument that, you know, whether he's made the right pick or not, usually I like to give it a couple of years before you really make even, you know, when it comes to players. And again, like Jalen Smith, like right this summer, if the Kings went out and signed Jalen Smith to a 3-year MLE, a mid-level exemption, and got him for a 3-year, $33 million deal, and he's your starting power forward for the next couple of years, you might actually be in good shape. He's super young. I think he's 21, mm-hmm. and he just blew up for Indiana. Yeah. So maybe he's grown up. Maybe he's ready to contribute now. So again, we know that like we judged early on Jalen Smith,
right?
And kept pointing fingers. But at the same time, I gotta tell you right now, if the Phoenix Suns had Tyrese Halliburton as their backup, that's working and growing behind Chris Paul and Devin Booker, he's that guy right there. Yeah. That team is even better. Yeah. And yeah, they really could have been incredible. So yeah.
We don't know for sure. Like you said, you laid out why it's hard to put a label on him after two drafts, but I do think he goes the best player available. Best player available in his mind. You know what I mean? That may not be everybody's best player available, but whatever's on his chart, whatever metric that he goes by, I think that is his general philosophy. Now, can that be, knocked off its axis a little bit because, you know, you have the four pick or a trade or whatever? Yeah, it can be. But I think in general, I think that's the way he would look at it. And I think that's the way he's going to look at it here if he decides to keep the pick.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference, though, between drafting 9 and drafting 12 and drafting 4.
Yeah.
Like, just the whole mindset is different.
Yeah.
Like, when you're drafting at 9, you're looking for a solid rotational player. Mm-hmm. When you're drafting at 12, you're hoping you get a solid rotational player, a guy who can actually maybe break into your starting lineup, maybe, and you're hoping, you know, there's that potential that they're just more like a 7 or an 8. And that's where, you know, again, Tyrese Halliburton, like, he was so toolsy in college, and you're wondering the whole time, will it translate? Will it translate? And sure enough, it translated beautifully. He's incredible. But again, there were question marks about whether he could get a shot off, whether he is strong enough to defend, you know, whether he was a lead guard or a shooting guard. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there were plenty of questions. But when you're drafting at 9, you know, you should be able to get a starter in the top 10. You should be able to get a starter. I'm not sure that he got a starter, but he got really close to it, because I think Davion will be in the league for a long time, and he'll be top end of the rotation. You're probably the first guard off your bench for a long time. But when you're drafting at 4, that's where it just gets, I mean, you have, I'll say this, you have to have the leeway to make the mistake.
Mm.
You have to have the ability to make a mistake right there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we can trash, like, go back to the most incredible draft of all time, right? 2003. So we got LeBron, and then Darko goes 3, and you end up with, what, Carmelo, Chris Bosh at 4, mm-hmm. and Wade at 5, right? I think mm-hmm. that's the way they laid out. And the Pistons were, like, a championship team. If they would have drafted, Carmelo yeah. Anthony, which is what they should have done, like, they could have carried on that dynasty for a long.
Oh, there you go. I thought you froze up on my end. I'm not sure if everybody heard you, but you froze up on my end.
Gotcha.
You're back now.
Okay.
You're back.
Yeah, so my point is that, like, look, we have to, you have to give someone the leeway to make that move, because the same guy that built those championship teams in Detroit is the same guy that missed on, like, 3 Hall of Famers. And so, like, that's why I don't like that Monty McNair is going into this offseason without, as of right now, like, could that change tomorrow? Yes, it could change tomorrow. But as of right now, like, I know they have not had negotiations at all. And so, like, when is the phone call coming?
Right. And so that's actually what I was going to ask you as well. Like, I know I was listening to you guys on the Kings beat, and I think Sean brought up, yeah, that might be something that you hear about in August or September when you talk about an extension for Monty McNair. But I don't know. This isn't a normal situation. Like, if you might want to have those talks now, right? Like, and so he can approach the draft, approach free agency in a different way. If that's his case, like you said, I believe he's a genuine guy. I believe, you know, that might be the case, but you know, you would hope that he would be able to just make a decision based on what would be best for this franchise, whether he's there or not. But he's also a human being. He's like, well, man, if they're saying I need to make the playoffs, then even though I would take Jaden Ivey, the pressure is making me trade the pick for John Collins. You know what I mean? Even though I don't think that's the best thing to do. You know, so is it a situation where typically they may be having talks after or later in the summer that needs to speed up? And what's the prospects of that? Is that do you think that's something that's on Vivek Mwanadibe's radar, that, yo, I need to kind of change how I normally would do it, and we need to talk about an extension now, whether they agree to have one now or not? The discussions need to be happening right now, right?
Yeah, I think they do. But again, they're going to handle things the way they want to handle them. I mean, we don't have a Mike Brown press conference yet. So typically, that would be a good moment to say that they're going to be together long term. So we probably still have, you know, probably 2 weeks at a minimum, right? Yeah. So, like, how long are the Warriors going to go in the playoffs? The Warriors could keep going, right? Yeah. So when it comes to this, like, it just takes sitting down and having the conversations. If that's what they want to do, if they don't want to do that, if they don't want to extend him, this is going to get really awkward. Like, that's not what anybody wants. And I think the other thing that might be missed here is that if you let them go into the season and the Kings start turning things around and you think that you're building something and all this stuff, who's to say that they want to come back? They're not under contract. Who's to say that they can't go get a better job out there because they just showed that they at least could turn around the worst franchise in the NBA. Like, it's not just a one-way street here. We're acting like it's the Kings have to give Monty a contract so they match up salaries with the coach, and that's the only reason.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about stability, we're talking about all these things, but we're also talking about guys that, like, look, if you're successful here, like, there will be jobs open next summer for McNair and for Wes Wilcox. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you think that you're the only one that would employ these guys?
Right.
I mean, Monty McNair was in the league for 13 years as a working all kinds of jobs, all the way up to an assistant GM job in Houston. Like, he'll be able to bounce right back and go get another job somewhere else, or he could actually have his pick of jobs, and now you're competing for his services as opposed to where you are now. So, yeah, it's a strange situation, and I just think that these things are avoidable, but they don't seem to be avoidable here.
Yeah, and that's the thing that just baffles me. You know, I don't get it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.